Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
The cup of 28, no? No?
Yes.
The Sambandha Tattva has three main aspects. Jada Jagat, the illusory potency. Two, the Jiva, the servitor and controlled. And three, Ishwara, the supreme controller, the personality of Godhead. In other words, relationship means you understand these three because that's what the relationship is with. Us and the Lord, us and the material energy. Right, the Lord, the material energy. That's what's going on. He creates, he expands everything. He's in control of. We're trying to control, but we're actually controlled. And then the material nature. Yes.
So relationships us between us, either through the material energy or through the Lord.
That, but at the same time as even, but these are the three aspects. So it can also be jiva to jiva.
Okay, like that. Yeah.
The point is these are where relationships lie, right? Does that make sense? Because one may say, well, what about the spiritual world? But we're counting the spiritual world with the Lord because it's his place where he has his pastimes. You remember the Lord, you go to there. You don't have to worry. You don't remember the Lord, you stay here. That's why then we have to consider the material world. Right, you understand? Mm. It means no Lord, you get the material world. Lord, you get the spiritual world as a bonus. Mm. You understand? It goes together. Like that. You know, here, no bonus. I mean, of course, birth, death, old age, diseases thrown in, like that. Yeah, so that's good. You know, so I guess there is some benefits.
Some
right,
people play around.
Yeah. The Lord is one without a second, right? They don't get hungry up there, no fatigue, that. Here you get all those things, you know, it's like that.
Opportunity.
Yes. The Supreme Lord is one without a second. Omnipotent, all-attractive, the only abode of unlimited Aishwarya, displayed in Vaikuntha, and Madhurya, displayed in Goloka Vrindavan, and the only shelter for both the Jiva Shakti and the Maya Shakti. Although he is simultaneously the shelter and ultimate source of both the Jiva Shakti and the Maya Shakti, he is still aloof and independent and exists in his own supreme independent form, which is uncommonly beautiful. Right? It's very important to always remember this point, because the tendency is we'll think, yes, Krishna created everything, or he's in my heart. Right? But that's why we always talk about going beyond Brahman and Paramatma. This very point, because we'll say, yes, I'm remembering the Lord, which we are, but we're only thinking of it in two features. Mm. See, the point is the two features are coming from the one feature, right? The personality, meaning the supreme personality as Bhagavan, right? That's where you have pastimes. You don't have pastimes technically with Brahman and Paramatma, right? It means... Does that make sense? It's like the kids go out and play, right? They run around, they can go this and that, climb the trees, you know, fall out of the trees, you know, all the things that they like to do, right? But now if all you can do is lay in bed, you're in a Minerva cast, right? You know Minerva cast, you know, head to foot cast. All you can do is like bend your little finger like that. So now someone says, hey, you want to play? We can play, you know, pinky wrestling, you know. Is that called playing? No. So then that's the point. Is that their relationship as the personality of Godhead, that's real. Right? All this other, the other aspects are Krishna. They're appreciated because he is the one who is expanding and creating everything. He's controlling everything. He's doing that, but he's just doing that as God. You know what I'm saying? Then there's the person. Does that make sense? Like that? Means in your day, how much of your day means that, okay, let's say, means it's slightly problematic question, but we'll try to frame it nicely. How much of your day, you know, if, let's say in a normal situation, well, even that's a problem. Like in Germany, if you don't hold two shifts a day, you know, you're a lazy bum. So this is not going to work is the question. Okay, Prabhupada mentions that the normal amount you work in a day for your occupation is 8 hours. Right? That's standard, okay? So now we'll avoid all these other local issues, you know, of how much that's the, right? And so that means there's more time is there in your lifestyle. Does that make sense? And for us, 8 hours is not necessarily efficient. Or, you know, it means I've seen people who are very efficient do their whole day's work in about 20 minutes. Like that. One means, it means you see all these buses and they all say Tata on them? Right? The guy that makes all those buses, he does all his work in like 20 minutes a day. But, you know, on two phones at once and talking to secretaries at the same time and, you know, like that kind of a thing. Totally insane. But he does it like that. So the amount spent time, I mean, time spent, much of the time is also the, either you have to, it's not very efficient, you have to sit in the office for 8 hours, or it's because you feel you're doing something, you want to be able to put in, or I can get more or something. You understand? But Krishna, to be able to maintain the whole cosmic creation like that, just takes a spark of his ability. So that's not a big deal at all. You know, but for us, Brahman and Parama is big. But actually, it's Bhagavan that's big, that's special. Because that's what he does, you know, in the rest of his time. And for him, he expands as Brahman and Paramatma, so he can spend 24/7 as Bhagavan. Right? You know? It works out okay for him, right? Yes.
And then, why were we so attracted to those two features and purposely always avoiding Bhagavan?
Because they have an element of, not that they're mundane, but the mundane consciousness appreciates, you know, all pervading, or you know, sitting in the heart, or controlling everything. Does that make sense? Because these are the things that we want to do. We want to control everything or merge with everything. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the thing. If we control everything, then we'll enjoy. If we merge, then we'll enjoy. You understand? So these two are only concepts that are held within the material world. Though Krishna has these three aspects, in the spiritual world, they don't worry about the other two. You know, it's just kind of like they're known, but it's kind of like, okay, you know, he's the big guy, you know, he has, you know, he owns the whole building, he owns many buildings, like that. He lives in the penthouse suite, but, you know, he does take out the garbage. But is that something you talk about? No, you know. He flushes the toilet, you know, like that. You know, unless he has one of those talking Japanese ones, you know, like that. Then, you know, but in any case, he arranged it, you know, like that. You know, he said, yeah, he's such a great guy, he arranged a Japanese talking toilet, right? You know. Make sense?
Sounds interesting.
You never heard about it? No. You go into the toilet, it senses you're coming, the top opens, you know, it flushes itself, it, you know, warms the water, the seat's heated, you know, it's all like that. It's fully automatic. Like that. So he has one of those, okay? So, but he arranged it. But you don't talk about that. Yeah, he's such a great guy, you know, like that, you know, international. He has one of those toilets, you know. No, that's not what he's known for. You know? Does that make sense? Right? You know, it's not the guy got the Nobel Peace Prize because he flushes the toilet, right? You know, puts down the seat, you know, like that. You know, see? Does that make sense? So, in other words, these are very minimal. Just on the side, you can take care of them. So for Krishna, taking care of the whole cosmic creation, that's on the side. So that's why it's not so prominent. But with us, because we're trying to be the controller, therefore we make those the more prominent. Because that's what we want to be. We want to know all, be everywhere at all times, and control everything. Right? But it doesn't exactly work out. Is that okay?
Mark, is there bhakti for Paramatma or is bhakti reserved for Paramatma?
Bhakti is Bhagavan, because the point is if you're serving Paramatma in bhakti, then who is he? The person. So then you're dealing with, then it's Krishna. That's why it says then Krishna's in the heart. You know, say Paramatma, he's there if you recognize him or you don't. Right? But if you recognize, interact with him as Bhagavan, then he acts in that way. You know what I'm saying? Even Brahman acts as Bhagavan. Because they're non-different. So for Prahlad Maharaj, he sees Krishna in the pillar. So therefore he manifests as Bhagavan, because he sees it's Krishna who's in the pillar, not just the Brahman. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Brahma body only sees Brahma Jyoti, therefore that's all that's manifest. The Lord's bodily effulgence, known as the Brahma Jyoti, radiates unlimitedly from him and manifests as the impersonal Brahman. So the Brahma Jyoti and the impersonal Brahman are the same. So it's the effulgence that's radiating from him. So even that radiation, that's what's the cause of all creation. So he doesn't even have to actually do it himself. He doesn't have to create himself as Bhagavan. His Brahman effulgence does all that. Right? He is represented by and controls the creation by his partial expansion as Paramatma. Right? Because then we know here's the Supreme Lord. So he's represented in there. But it's not actually the full representation. It's only a partial representation. Because the full representation is he's interacting with his devotees. Right? Does that make sense? Because mostly God, he's there, he's great, he's powerful. You do something wrong, then, you got to watch out for thunderbolts or cracks in the earth. You know, things like that. Maybe a flood, maybe a bunch of locusts. You know, something you're going to have to worry about. Does that make sense? You know, like that. But that's only a partial. Because the point is it's his love for the devotees that he's interacting. That's the actual point. All his different manifestations and pastimes are a result of his para shakti, supreme divine power. Right? So that means every manifestation you see of the Lord, the interaction, that's his energy. That's why he and his energy are non-different. He manifests himself through the energy, but the energy is dependent upon him. Right? So they always go together. So wherever Krishna is, he's interacting with his internal potency. That's why it says he never consorts with the external. The external is simply the shadow of the internal. So he's always with the internal. The shadow's there. But that's not what he interacts with. You know what I'm saying? The Parashakti displays his prowess, Vikrama, in many different features. Only three of them are known to the Jivas. The Chit Vikrama, spiritual potency, which arranges the Lord's pastimes. The Tatastha Vikrama, the marginal Jiva potency by which the Jiva is created and maintained. And three, the Maya Vikrama, the illusory potency. Right? Because there's unlimited potencies, but these we know. Right? Because within that, there's all these fine, that they're just beyond our capacity. And you don't need to know about them. You know what I'm saying? You know, what's making the cloud go together and look beautiful? That you don't have to worry about. You understand? But whatever it is, that's his transcendental pastimes. Okay? Yes.
That's what a science gets distracted trying to unfold all these things.
Yeah, because they think if I work that out, it means like I go into a house and I see a piece of furniture. I don't know who lives in the house, who they are, what they do for a living, what they look like. But I think if I take, one piece of antique French furniture there and, analyze it and take it apart and you put it under an ion microscope, I'll be able to understand the person who has, created this whole, house and all the paraphernalia in it. Right? Because it's all unified, right? So therefore, microscopes, what's under here, and then, what's in his painting on the wall, it's all the same. I'll be able to understand them all. If I understand the carpenter, I'll understand the Van Gogh on the wall. And I'll understand the guy who bought it. I'll understand everything. Right? Kind of stupid, no? Like that. So you have very intelligent idiots trying to figure out what's going on. Like that. Yeah. Okay. Three, the Maya Vikrama, the illusory potency, the external energy which manifests the mundane universes, material time and material fruit of activities. Right? Because it doesn't manifest spiritual time or spiritual activities. That's why when you perform spiritual activity, then you're not functioning within the material world. Because it only deals with material time. Material time is endeavor, right? And the results from endeavor. Right? You have the material energy, right? You have the time, then the endeavor made with the material energy, right? And then the fruitive result. So that's the complete, the sambandhavideya piyojana of it. Right? But if you're dealing with material energy as it belongs to Krishna, so therefore your endeavor is not under material time, so the result is not material. It's not fruitive. Does that make sense? So you're not functioning with the material world. You're working with the external potency, but it's not functioning as external potency. Does that make sense? Okay. Thus, Sambandha Tattva is comprised of these three relationships. One, between the Supreme Lord and the Jiva. Two, between the Supreme Lord and the material energy. And three, between the Jiva and the material nature. The complete comprehension of these truths leads to Sambandha Gyan, transcendental knowledge. One cannot become a true and pure Vaishnava without this knowledge, right? Because that's what's lacking in that other. What did we have? We had the awake and the asleep. But then we had, within the devotional service, he made two divisions. One where the goal is pure devotion based on the four main rasas. And then you had these other forms. Remember the names of those?
Vritta.
Yeah, the Vritta, yeah, something like that. Some Vritta.
Vritta something.
Yes. So then we had those forms. They're not actually really devotional service. Because the Mayavadis, they perform devotional activities as one of the processes to elevate themselves to Brahman. And then the karmis, the smartas, they'll perform devotional service simply to get fruit of results. So it looks like they're following rituals that are authorized. Means that those are examples given. We don't give the unlimited examples of people who aren't authorized. But here it looks like it's authorized. They're following scriptures. They're following the Upasana Khanda, the Vedas. They're worshipping Vishnu. But the purpose is not to know Vishnu or to worship the goal is devotion. So that's how you know it's not actually real. Because it's being performed so that you get fruit of work. Right? It's being performed so that you merge in Brahman. Does that make sense? But one may say, but Bhagavatam mentions even if you have fruit of ideas or want liberation, you should go to the Supreme Lord. That's true, but you should go to him as Bhagavan. They're not. They're actually just going to him as a form of Brahman or as Paramatma. They're not actually dealing with Bhagavan, so that's why it's not actually devotion. Does that make sense? You know, just like in chanting the holy name, you have Pratibimba Namabhas. When the Mayavadis are chanting the holy name, but it's not even the holy name. It looks like the holy name. It's got the syllables, you know, it makes the same sound vibration. But it doesn't have the chit potency. So that's why it doesn't actually get you anything. Because it's not coming in parampara, it's not being chanted for devotion. Yes.
But it will still in some way purify?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, but all you can get out of it is liberation, so it's not. But that's with great endeavor, because that's your goal, so therefore it's just very hard. But now, Namabhas means you're dealing actually with the holy name. It's empowered by, you know, the chit potency is there. But it's not being done purely. But that just on its own you'll get liberation without any side endeavor. Right? And then if you actually try to do to please Krishna, that you'll get prema. Does that make sense? So in the same kind of way, then you have these forms of devotional service that you'll see very, very, well, means if you know where to look, very common in India, right? That people are worshipping Vishnu, and you know, like you go to so many houses, and they're all devotees of Vishnu. They all have pictures on the wall, and they're on their altar. They've got, so they all worship, right? And but they're only worshipping for the purpose of, you know, fruit of results or going to the Brahman, and they're not worshipping as Bhagavan. They're worshipping as, you know, a manifestation of the Lord in the mode of goodness. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it either borders more on offensiveness of the Mayavadis. The Smartas don't generally take it that far. Just, you know, there's some deity you worship, and then you'll get your results. So therefore, you know, it's not that he can't be God. It's just that they just don't really care. It's just he's the guy you got to go to. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say you have to, you want to get some work done. You need to file some papers. You have to go to some secretary or some officer. So you don't really care about the person, you know. All you know is that this is the process. So you're going to him because you're supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. So they're going to Vishnu because that's what you're supposed to do. But not that they could care. It could be, you know, anybody, Humphrey Bogart, anybody. They wouldn't care. Does that make sense? Right, yeah. As he walks in, he goes, I knew it!
Yeah. Play it again. Play it again.
Yeah. So, one cannot become a true and pure Vaishnava without this knowledge, because that's what's lacking. They don't actually know who God is, or the Jiva, or the material world. So that's why you can't be a true and pure Vaishnava without this knowledge. Right? And the knowledge is simple. Krishna is God, right? We're his servant. And the material energy is to be engaged in his service. That's the you know, fundament of it. You know that, you'll be successful. Then how much you can build on that, you know, to accommodate everything in your life, then that's, you know, what's important. Lahiri Mahashai further inquired, I have heard it said about the Vaishnavas that they are controlled by feelings and emotions, and they have no need for knowledge. Right? Because you have to remember, at this time, the Sahajiyas were the prominence. Mm-hmm. That's why they weren't seen in a good light. Because mm-hmm. they didn't know philosophy. There was just sentiment. They weren't very sophisticated mm-hmm. at all. You know, so quite a rough, you know, kind of street bunch. Emotional, you know, could you imagine an emotional bunch of street people, right, that, you know, that are so-called religious. You know, it'd be a wild kind of crew. So, you know, who would want to get near them, right? So that's what we're talking about here. Because Lahiri Mahashai is coming from this, you know, high-grade Brahmin background. So it'll be more towards the Smarta, that kind of direction. While I was carefully tuning my feelings in chanting Harinam, I never cared for Sambandha Gyan. Right? Tuning my feelings, right? Get the feeling, get in the groove, you know, that. So it's nice. It means that one's absorbed in the holy name, that's the groove, but that you're getting the feeling out of it, then that's, you know what I'm saying? Oh, the Kirtan Sasu, I'm not getting the feeling. But the point is no, it's the holy name. You know, we're not getting the feeling because we're looking for the feeling. When you look for Krishna, that comes automatically. Vaishnava Das Babaji replied, cultivating bhava is indeed the highest goal of a Vaishnava, but this bhava must be pure. Those who try to merge into Brahman also try to develop bhava, but their motions are not shuddha bhava, they are merely an imitation. Right? Therefore, the cultivation of Sambandha Gyan is absolutely essential for pure devotee, because the Brahma-Bhuta, which is where bhava is cultivated, and moksha are at the same situation. You're in the same position of transcendence. The difference is one, you're interacting with the Supreme Lord, and one, you're not. Right? It means the impersonalists get to the Brahman platform and don't care about the personality. They just care about the experience, the feeling of Brahman, or Brahmananda. Right? That's why it's talked about. Even that happiness is only a drop compared to the unlimited ocean of prema. Because that point, it means, you know, will be nice. You know what I'm saying? If you have a situation now that's pleasant, no problems in that, you think it's nice. You know, hey, this could go on. You know, so then we have to point out, no, it's temporary, it's this, it's that, so that we come into reality. So same with the Brahman. We'll think, oh, this is very nice. But the point is that it's not so nice. It means, yes, it may be nice, but compared to what's actually there, it's not that great. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Well, as it is said here, cultivation of Sambhada Gyan is absolutely essential for pure devotee.
Yes.
Can we also say that for an aspiring devotee, it's not essential to cultivate Sambhada Gyan?
No. For aspiring devotee, everybody must cultivate. Because if they don't know Krishna is God and I'm his servant, how they'll cultivate devotion? Does that make sense?
Yes. But it means we can practice without knowing fully about Sambhada Gyan.
That means fully knowing about Sambhada Gyan. How will we fully know Krishna? It means we know how much the jiva is capable of knowing. You know what I'm saying? So what you're capable of knowing at the time, that's what you should know.
Yes.
Right? Because at some point you study so much, then you have to do something practical. Right? Because Shravanam, then there's Manana. You have to apply it. Right? So it's everybody, how much is there? So someone who's more doing karma yoga, then a little bit of knowledge will take them a long way. They'll be able to do a lot of activity. But if they're in jnana yoga, then they'll be cultivating more the understanding and then applying that into what they're doing. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of what stage one's at. But the point is that knowledge must be cultivated. Like that? That's why there's Bhagavatam class every day, and you know, one does reading and one talks with devotees. Because that's the cultivation of Sambhada Gyan. Because all you're talking about is Krishna, the jivas, and the material world. Like that. So it's going, it's just so nicely put in to the program that it's already working. Doing stuff like this is then specifically trying to cultivate. You know what I'm saying? You're taking that aspect of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and expanding on that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Previously mentioned that he was tuning his emotions.
Tuning, yes.
And would it be that the indication, if we have some feelings after chanting, would it be the indication that we're doing something right?
Yes. But the point is he's worried about tuning the emotions rather than about pleasing Krishna. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if one is gaining some taste and happiness from chanting Hare Krishna, that means something's going right. But then to get distracted and just focus on that rather than what put you there. You know what I'm saying? If by hearing the name, then you're feeling happiness, why would you focus on the happiness? Because it's nourished by the name. So if you're only looking at happiness, then it's not being produced. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Lahiri Mahabhashai asked, if Bhagavan is endowed with form, this presupposes spatial limitations. How then could Bhagavan be the source and superior to the unlimited, all-pervasive Brahman? Right, so now here's where the Brahmanism comes out. Right? You know? Because they're saying is that if Bhagavan has form, that means then it's limited by space. But that's his internal potency. There's manifestation, but he's still unlimited. That's why we see in the Damodar pastime, they take a rope, try to put it around him. It won't work. You get a big rope, it won't go around. You tie all the ropes together, it doesn't go around. Bring all the ropes to the village, it still won't go around. So it's just, we can perceive him that way. That's the inconceivable potency. Is that the internal potency can manifest form that's still unlimited. So that's why it says, you know, we can comprehend these three. Right? And that's only comprehend. It doesn't say we can get a full understanding. No, we can comprehend. This is like what we can deal with. Right? You know, 1/10,000th the tip of the hair You can't stuff a whole lot in there. You know what I'm saying? So it's not volume that's important, it's quality. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? Like the capacity what an adult can do and what a small child can do is vastly different. Right? The child can, you know, get out their toys and play a little bit and make a mess on the floor. Like that. While the father, you know, can manage this huge, like, empire. Right? So quantity is not comparable. But as far as emotion goes, qualitatively, they can be the same. Does that make sense? So the feelings of the child and the feelings of the adult, those are qualitatively the same. So that's what's happening. The jiva, though he's so small, quantitatively, there's no question. We're the smallest. Like that, all other energies are, you know, unlimited. We're not, you know. And so, but it's qualitatively we can be the same as the Lord, and that the consciousness is the same. So that's the platform we're trying to function on. Right? So how much we can understand, that's what we deal with. You know what I'm saying? Because we're looking at here, you know, we have this stack of papers here, and we're thinking this is a lot. That means Ananta, with his thousand mouths, how long is it going to take him to say this book? Right? Not long, you know, some seconds or, you know, and then, okay, and now what does he do for the rest of eternity? Right? Does that make sense? So that means that there's a certain amount manifest that we can appreciate, but otherwise the glories and the knowledge is unlimited. You know what I'm saying? So we're anyway only how much we can do. But the point is, it's within our perspective. So within our perspective, it's very great. So that's fine. Does that make sense? That's not the problem. The problem with the child is not that, you know, all they can accommodate is their little bit pile of toys. Right? That's not why the parent, you know, deals or doesn't deal. Right? That's what they can accommodate. But it's the emotional exchange. That's important. Does that make sense? Yes.
You said we can understand the macrocosm by understanding the microcosm.
Right.
So is that, it's not just being fully self-conscious, we can understand Krishna, but that our self means in connection with Krishna.
Yes. So because self means we're part of Krishna, so it means it goes together. That's why the Mayavadi, their self-realization is not complete, because it's only dealing only with the jiva and only with Brahman. But the point is they're leaving out, you know, Bhagavan. So it's not going to actually get good results. That's why it's so troublesome. It's so difficult. Because Bhagavan, then you have the whole picture. It's very simple. But if you try to understand everything through just Brahman, very difficult. Yes?
It's kind of funny they call it self-realization when there is no self.
Yeah, ultimately there's no selves. Yeah. Yeah. So again, goes back to only the devotees are practicing self-realization. Okay, so he's worried that these spatial limitations will be there, but this is the divine potency. You're able to appreciate the form, and it's for the size, whatever it is. We're here on this size, then Krishna comes, he comes at this size. Right? If he's someplace with a bigger, he's bigger. You know, he's with Hiranyaksha. You know, he's, you know, takes up, you know, a good amount of the universe like that, because that's how big he is. When they were born, you know, they immediately grew up to the heavenly planets, so they're big. So then he comes, you know, can you imagine, he comes down like that, he has to bend over and say, you know, how's that going to work, you know, like that, you know, I'm going to bite your toe. No, it's just not going to, it's like, you know, you're not going to get worried about it, you know. Even kneecaps, you're not going to get worried about it, you know. Unless, of course, the guy's Irish. Then you worry about it. Right? You know, stuff like that. But, so listen. Yeah, okay. So, therefore, he's the same size, you know. He functions in that same size. Then it works. Okay. Babaji Maharaj replied, even one of the mundane ingredients of this material creation, called Aksha, is practically Akash is practically unlimited. Is then the unlimited Akash superior to Bhagavan? Actually, Sri Bhagavan is also limitless by virtue of his infinite potency, one aspect of which is the Brahman, which is manifest as his bodily luster, and is an infinite and omnipresent. So therefore, we see why it's connected is the connection of Brahman is the luster of the body of the of Bhagavan. Bhagavan's luster is Brahman. Right? So that's the connection. Right? Bhagavan's partial representative and controller of the universe, you know, of the material world is Paramatma. Like that. So that's the connections. That's why it's always mentioned in this way. Otherwise you tend to think of Brahman on its own. But it's just the effulgence.
Is that the clue for the Mayavadis? Because they're attracted to that?
Yes, yes. Then it's from there, then they can go on. Because the point is, it's not a problem of being attracted by Brahman. The problem is if you think the Brahman is the goal. You know? Does that make sense? So if you think Brahman is great, then what about the person that the Brahman's coming from? If that's just his effulgence, then how great is the personality who's manifesting that effulgence? You know what I'm saying? Like, say someone is very happy. Something worked out really good for them. Right? What it means, you notice that effulgence. You know what I'm saying? When someone's upset or that, there's lack of that. Right? You know, like it'll say the person is looking very dark or like that. It's because there's no effulgence. But when they happen, then there's so much brightness. Right? So just because you appreciate the brightness doesn't mean that you're getting the benefit of the person, the interaction, and what's causing that. Right? Does that make sense? So the interaction between the Lord and the devotees is so wonderful. Therefore, we see all this manifestation of the Brahmajyoti. Does that make sense? However, simultaneously, Bhagavan accepts a finite form. Can any other entity compare with this? He's unlimited, but he can accept this form, and it doesn't compromise his unlimitedness. We're going to say, no, but he can't be unlimited. He is an unlimited simultaneously. You know, it's not that by having the form, Brahman is not there. You know, say, so he can do both at once. That's the point. Nobody else can do that. We're 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. And you come back tomorrow, we'll be 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. You know, we're an elephant, 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. We're, you know, Indra Gopa Germ, 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. It doesn't matter. We're always 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. But he's unlimited. At the same time, he can have his form. And he's not controlled by the form. You know, he can... By this unparalleled, unsurpassable nature, Bhagavan is superior to the Brahman concept. Bhagavan personifies a wonderful, all-attractive personal quality, which is complemented by his omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence. Right? So the personal quality is what's special, and it's complemented by these other aspects. Those are just side benefits. You know, he's a nice guy, and he happens to be unlimited, or know everything, or be, you know, all-pervasive. You know, so, you know, it's, you know, it's a plus, okay?
You always know where to find him.
Yeah, yeah, true. Bhagavan manifests boundless compassion and is the source of paramount bliss to the absolute degree. Is not such a clearly defined personal identity ideal? Right? Because everything is there. He is the source of bliss, so any interaction with him will give bliss. So anything that means he's giving all that happiness, so just how much is his effulgence is coming from him, so therefore some happiness is coming from that effulgence. Right? So if they're appreciating the happiness there, then what about the happiness of the person? Would you prefer an entity that possesses neither characteristics nor potencies simply as an impersonal, omnipresent existence? No, think about it. You know, it's just... That's all you get, you know. It's just that omnipotence or omnipresence. It's not even omnipotence. Omnipresence, no form, no nothing, and then that's supposed to be special. You know, when you have the personality that's the source of all happiness, that would be much better.
Yeah. Not to rub shoulders with it.
Yeah, there's no shoulders. And because there's only existence, there's no rubbing either. So it's just... Yeah. Far-sighted persons are not satisfied with anything less than the complete whole, the entirety of the absolute truth. Far-sighted. So near-sighted means they only just deal with what's right there, their immediate happiness or happiness they can get just from that situation. The Vaishnavas are not impressed by this impersonal concept because it is contrary to the eternal theistic principle and to the edicts of prema. Right? Because you can't interact. So it's opposed to that. But at the same time, as these samatas are one and different. So it's like it all goes together, but the focus is always on Bhagavan. Bhagavan Sri Krishna is the source and shelter of both the personal and impersonal concepts. He's, you know, so personal meaning shelter of, so Paramatma is personal, Brahman is impersonal, like that. But he only actually becomes actually fully personal when you're dealing with Bhagavan. He is the shoreless ocean of sublime joy, drawing close to himself all pure souls. Right, the shoreless ocean, right? So his effulgence makes the unlimited ocean of Brahman. But bigger than the unlimited ocean is the shoreless ocean. Right? Okay, so drawing close to himself all pure souls, because the pure soul, then the consciousness and his consciousness, because he's the supreme pure, so pure and pure, that can have a relationship.
Maharaj, by using this expression, far-sighted person,
yes,
is he kind of including him in a superior category so he will be inspired to...
He's just pointing out the persons who are far-sighted. So it's just a matter if he takes that position, then, because the point is far-sighted, they're not satisfied with anything less than the complete. So the point is, if you're actually far-sighted, why would you want something less? Because Bhagavan, it's his effulgence is Brahman. But if you only want Brahman, where's the Bhagavan part?
So you'd be inviting him, I mean, if you wanted to...
Yeah, means you're pointing out, in other words, you're pointing out as a third person, so you're not saying he's short-sighted. You know, it's just like, you know, like let's say the child is not behaving properly, right, due to immaturity, right? And so you might say, you know, big girls don't do that, you know, they're peaceful, they do this, they do that. So you're not saying that, you know, you're not big and you're acting like an idiot. No, you're pointing out that they do this. So then it's a matter of, I'm big, so therefore I should do this. Right? Because if I say far-sighted, he'll necessarily say, yeah, I'm far-sighted, so therefore then I have to not be satisfied with anything less than the complete whole. So it's just a very nice way of using the third person to... Right, so you've said the point, but you said it very pleasantly, and it makes it attractive. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is a way. Means, in other words, here you have very intelligent, knows the scriptures, you know, follows rules, but how to attract. So these are all preaching methods. Well, just it's a nice story. No, this is how you preach. This is the technique. Lahiri Mahashai, when meditating upon Sri Krishna's form, I get the feeling in my heart as if I were bound by time and space. Is there any method of meditation upon the Lord that can overcome this feeling? Because he's feeling when that's there is that he's limited by this, because he's just having that contamination that Brahman is supreme. Mm-hmm. So therefore that will come up. It's not coming from Krishna, it's coming from his Vaishnava Das Babaji. Meditation is an activity of the mind. As long as the mind is not on the pure spiritual plane, meditation cannot touch the divine. So it's not actually dealing with Krishna there. Mm-hmm. To some degree, but it's limited because he thinks Brahman is superior, so therefore it's not going to come out so well. However, when the consciousness is imbued with bhakti, gradually the mind becomes spiritualized, at which point meditation is naturally transcendental. Right? So it's just a matter of when there's the, how do you say it? The chit potency is there from devotion, then it can be understood. That's the point, is that when the Lord reveals himself, then we can understand. But if he doesn't reveal himself, we can't understand.
Meditation on the void has no real meaning?
Meditation on the void. No, it doesn't. It's not so. It means it will probably make the mind peaceful to some degree. In other words, if it's so agitated, it'll bring it to the neutral state, but it can't bring it to the positive. Right? But because we define pleasure as removal of pain, therefore we'll say this meditation is giving great happiness. But all it is just, it's the happiness of not having any problem. It's not actually the happiness of doing something worthwhile. It's just the happiness of not doing something stupid. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So they'll get some benefit, but that's why they do it for some time, and then after a while, you don't. You know what I'm saying? Do you hear much about all these paths that they talk about, the impersonal, but do you hear much about people who've come to that platform and what they do and how happy they are? No, you don't hear about it. You know, there's one person here or there that, you know, does the whole thing, but then some of these things, you know, your Taoist, you know, they've been there for thousands of years. So how many Taoist perfect persons do you hear about? You know, for a whole country as big as that, with the, how many, you know, millions of people they have practicing it over 2,500 years, you'd expect something, you know, a few. You know what I'm saying? Or the Mayavadis, they've been going on since Sankaracharya, right? You know, so he came before the other Acharyas. So that goes back, you know, quite a long time. But in 1,000 years or more, that means how? No, Ramanuja is 1,200, so you had to be before that. So,
8th century.
Okay, so then 1,200 also, around the same thing. So Ramanuja came just after that then. So then. How many have 1,200 years? It's a long time. You expect to hear about a few, you know, happy Mayavadis. You know, where are they? You understand? So that's the whole thing. It's not there. It's not actually possible. So all it is you're removing the pain, and that's what they'll say is great. But after a while, they get bored. So what do? Take up philanthropic work. You know, something that has some rasa, some interaction with others. Because just being, you know, peaceful is not enough. You want to be peaceful, then you can focus on positive interaction. So, when you abandon all material doubts and mundane logic and constantly apply yourself to Sri Nam, spiritual realization will quickly arise within you of its own accord. Right? In other words, you're following the process. It'll come on its own. It's not because we're studying, that's why we're going to know Krishna. We're following the process of associating with Krishna through the name, form, qualities, and pastimes and the association of Vaishnavas. That's then, by his own accord, then we get realization. You understand? Bhakti is not dependent upon jnana. But the point is how do you show devotion to somebody if you don't want to know about them? You know what I'm saying? And I mean, somebody's there, you know, you know who they are, but you know, that's all. You just maybe see them and this and that. But then you develop an interest in the person. So then what are the first questions? Right? It's about them as a person. Where are they from? What have they done? You know, this, that. What? So the point is if you're not inquiring about the Sambandha Gyan, then how is one actually interested in Krishna? You understand? So it's just a part of the natural process. You follow the natural process, Krishna is pleased, then there's realization. Yeah.
Meaning that realization of Krishna does not depend on our own endeavors.
No, it depends on Krishna being pleased with our endeavor.
So we should endeavor despite...
Yes. Despite ourselves, yes. Despite our mundane perspectives, yes.
And the indication would be our... happiness and still in the process.
Yeah, you could also throw in Vaishnavas being happy with what you're doing. But yes, the point is if you're not happy, then that means something's missing. You know what I'm saying? So generally what's missing is consciousness, because activities, generally all devotees are doing the right activities. Right? So it's just a matter of consciousness.
And the next thing, we have 9 verses of the devotional service. We can see some devotees can engage in more than one, and you know, like one program we have all inclusive, and then there are so many kirtans, this, that, and if you attract it to one particular process, could it be enough?
Yeah. But the point is that doesn't mean you avoid the other one. Sit at home all day and no, we just listen to Harinam. Because Haridas Thakur, that's all he did. You don't see him really dealing so much with the others. But but there is also the element that self full surrender, you know, the respect for the devotees. Like that. So then, you know, there's always going to be. The point is any one can is perfect. It can give the perfect, the full realization. But generally, they always come in a group. Anyway, you know, to do deity worship, then you have to do kirtan. You know. So it goes together. You have to deal with paraphernalia. It's the part of Satan is. Okay.
So when he says here, will arise within its own course. So etiquette will be a very important element to arise that.
Yes. Because if the etiquette's not there, how do you interact? Because the point is Krishna is pleased by interaction. Right? Existence, you know, or just thought's not enough. But that's dynamic in a relationship. That's what's interesting. So then that would be part of, you know, that there's interaction. Yes.
No.
Sorry. Yes. No.
No.
Very good.
Stupid question.
Maybe. Okay.
Okay.
Lahiri Mahashai, I feel I have understood the truth about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. May I request you to kindly tell me about Jiva Tattva, the principle of the individual soul. So now he's explained the Lord. He's explained his potencies, and he's explained rasa. Does that make sense? Mm. So that means now we've completed the 3 topics with the Lord. Right? Now he wants to know about the jivas. Right? Because there's 3 things that one can know about. Okay. Vaishnava Das. Sri Krishna possesses countless potencies of which the Tathasta Shakti is one. Issuing forth, right, so he's connected it back to the position of Krishna in those 3 aspects, right? Of him being the supreme, him being the source of all potencies, and him being the source of all happiness. But now, so now within that, the study, because we're studying the jiva as one of the 3, then that's connected to the Lord as one of his potencies, but then it's studied also specifically, it's expanded on its own. Issuing forth from this marginal potency are entities who are situated between the chit jagat and the jada jagat, and which have the potency to associate with either, the potential, excuse me. These entities are known as jiva tattva. The form of the jiva tattva is chit paramanu, an infinitesimal particle of spiritual energy. The minuscule form of the individual jiva makes him vulnerable to the sway of the jada jagat, material energy. Simultaneously, however, because of his innate spiritual constitution, even with a slight spiritual support, the jiva can become an eternal resident of this transcendental abode of the Lord and experience supreme joy. So even though he can be overwhelmed by the material energy, but the point is just a little bit of spiritual support, and immediately he is able to take part in the spiritual activities in the spiritual world. Because that's actually his natural position, because he is transcendental to the material nature. But if he was a part of material nature, consciousness arose from nature, why would there be a need to get out of it? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. There are two types of jiva, so that's the position of the jiva, okay? Now we discuss within that the two kinds of jivas. There are two types of jivas, mukta, liberated, residing in the spiritual world, and badha, bound, residing in the material world. There are two types of badha jivas, those who are spiritually awake, udita vivek, and those who are spiritually unconscious, anudita vivek. Right? So in this, those who are liberated, they're all awake. But of those who are bound, then some are awake and some are not awake. Mm. Only the Vaishnavas are spiritually awake because no one except them genuinely endeavors to attain the supreme spiritual goal. Others are aware, but they're not interested in the goal of knowing the Lord. So that means even though they're aware of God, they're not actually awake. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why those who recognize God, you know, it means who are theistic, then they're in the superior position of those who are asleep. Mm-hmm. Right? Those who are following regulation then are superior to that. Right? Those who are following what's coming in line, you know, the proper, you know, authorized processes, then that's superior to that. Right? Those who follow the Vedas, then that's superior to that. Right? Of that, within that, then who follows the, that, you know, that Brahminical culture, lifestyle, everything, that's superior. Right? Then of that, who's studying, teaching, that's superior. But still, all of this, it's still asleep. Though it's better qualities of sleep. Does that make sense? Yeah. That is the way the Shastras have declared that serving the Vaishnavas and associating with them is the best of all activities, because that will make one awake. Right? Mm. So one can say is, oh, but we're for awake, why there's so much, you know, involvement in the material energy? Because we're awake, but we don't really think we're awake. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you had a bad dream, someone wakes you up, but you're still thinking about the dream, you're not thinking about being awake. Mm. So that's what's happening. We're still thinking about the material energy, even though we're awake. Like that. So then gradually, we start to notice we're awake, and then you don't worry about the dream anymore. Does that make sense? So yes.
Only a Vaishnava can give like a slight spiritual support to anyone.
Yeah, no, that means the devotees, that means it's there. The scripture's there, guru's there, sadhu's there. You know, so all these different activities are all ways to give that support. And then, depending upon our conditioning, we may notice one or notice another.
Yes.
So in some way, then, we're associating, and that way it's supported, and then we can elevate ourselves.
So if our consciousness is quite large, we can perceive the support more easily.
Yes, means the more far-sighted.
Yeah.
Can we count Christians among devotees? I mean, it's not sectarian like this. You have to be identifying yourself as a Vaishnava.
Means, in other words, there's the progressive element that they're, you know, how you say, moral theists.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the platform on which you can appreciate devotional service. But the point is what is the purpose of their devotion.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Yeah. So if it's to go to the heavenly planets, where are the smartest trying to go? Heavenly planets. So what's the difference? So therefore, it's that second group of you know, Vaishnav practices that's doing the form of Vaishnavism, but it's not actually for the purpose of the Vaishnav goal. So you don't really count them as devotees.
So
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And then what's the Shastric position? What authorizes what they're doing?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Who says you take the nice goblet like that and you have the you know, the wine you wash and then you put this and that and do all
always
done where does it come from?
We've always done it like that.
Always done it like that? They were Jewish before. They didn't always do it.
But in the connection with spiritual support, they can still...
Means they will have... You see, like Lahiri Maharshi means he, from the Brahminical point of view, is that here they're following the Brahminical lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? Focusing on the name. Mm-hmm. So, and he's come from that background, mm-hmm. so he can relate to that aspect. But philosophically, he has a problem because of the... He's not a monotheist. Mm-hmm. He's an impersonalist. Yeah. Right? Now... The those who follow these monotheistic religions, they'll find the easiness on that side, right? So the philosophy that God's a person and this and that, they'll be able to accept that very easily. But they'll have the difficulty in following the Brahminical lifestyle.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Sound familiar? Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that it's just no situation is ideal. Karma has its advantages and disadvantages. Jnana has its advantages and disadvantages.
So you start with the working principle.
Yeah, and then work from there. Because the point is you're starting with whatever's the advantage in yours and trying to reduce the disadvantage by adding the advantage of the other. Yeah. So that's Buddha Yoga. Yeah. You're performing your activities with proper knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But wherever you start, if you're we're more of a jnani, then you add the karma aspect. If you're more of a karmi, you add the jnana aspect. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is everything has a position from which you can work. Even the guy is an atheist, but the point is why is he an atheist?
He believes in something.
Yeah, something is there. If he doesn't believe, he wouldn't be, a functioning. Yeah, so something is there, but what's caused that? Where is back from that? But it goes back to, probably had faith, and then something happened, materially went bad, and so therefore then, how can there be God? How could God allow this to happen? Right? Or they're very convinced that they're God, something. So you have to, you start from whatever is the superior elements of whatever is their position. Right, so that's why it's said that the Brahminical is the highest, because it is based on Shastra. So, as a lifestyle, as a method, it's superior, mm-hmm. but it's incomplete, and because the consciousness of the Absolute is not there. Mm-hmm. Add that, then you see Vaishnav Das, how quickly he went from his position to this other. Right, so he is practicing Brahman from the Gyan side, right, and Lahiri is from the Karma side. So ultimately, it's also, even the Karma is impersonal. You know what I'm saying? Because you're only worshiping God to get your fruit of work. Once you have, results. Once you have that, then you don't really care about him as a person. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you can have your party and God's not going to walk in the door and everyone's going to freak out, then you're going to have your party. But if you know he might walk in at any time, then you're a little more careful. You know what I'm saying? That's all. But if he doesn't walk in, yeah, who cares? You know what I'm saying? If Moses hadn't come down off the mountain, they would have gone on with their party. But it's a... You know what I'm saying? But it's... So... Yeah. So Vaishnav Das here. So here you have two examples of the Mayavadi and the Smarta, and how nicely they're able to take up it because they have faith in the authority of the scriptures. That's the advantage. You know what I'm saying? Because here you could say no, but this or that, but it's still they have faith in the scriptures. So that's an advantage. While the other is that we'll say, this is this, and oh, I don't believe in that, or no intelligent person will accept that, or so many things like that. So we oppose the scriptures. So that's not recommended. It's not good. Like that. That is why the Shastra have declared that serving the Vaishnavas, associating with them, is the best of all activities. Right? Because the Brahminical means you have to associate with Vaishnavas. Right? It means a Brahmin, if you have to give in charity. You're going to give in charity to Brahmins. And then of those Brahmins, if you're fortunate, there'll be a Vaishnava there. You have to perform sacrifices, so you need Brahmins to do that. You know what I'm saying? You're supposed to hear from the scriptures. You're going to hear from a Brahmin. So if you're sincere, then those Brahmins will be Vaishnavas. If you're not, you won't be. You know? Like that. Lahiri Maharshi. Master, I have grasped Krishna Tattva and have also understood Jiva Tattva. Kindly elaborate upon Maya Tattva, the principle of the illusory material creation. Vaishnava Das Babaji. Maya is known as the inferior potency, Apara Shakti, or the external potency, Bahiranga Shakti. So here, Apara means not transcendental, but it's a reflection of the transcendental. That means then if you deal with it properly, accordingly, then you can deal with it like the original. Right? So therefore, Apara Vidya means knowledge how the Apara Shakti works. But how to use that Shakti in the Lord's service. That's what Apara Vidya is. Darkness is always far away from the light. Similarly, Maya remains at a good distance from Sri Krishna and his devotees. The Maya Shakti manifests the material elements, the 14 divisions of planetary systems, and the Ahankar. Right? The material elements is what everything's made out of. The 14 divisions are all the situations that all those manifestations will be in. Right? And then to be involved in that, you have to have the Ahankar that I think I am that. So this is actually a very complete explanation. We'll think it's okay, material elements, 14 planetary systems, Ahankar. Why that? You understand? But everything's made out of the material elements. Right? Now, that what is made from the material element needs a situation. What are the situations? 14 planetary systems. Right? And then how are you going to function in that? You have the false ego. But you have real ego. Then you're taking the material elements in the material situations and using it for Krishna. So it's spiritual. So it's not material anymore. Does that make sense? So that's why the Ahankar is the first thing we go for. Just like in the whole process, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, first thing we try to, well, one, you explain Sambandha so that people are appreciated. But is in the whole process simply the goal. The goal is for Krishna. Right? It's for you, it's fruited. It's for Krishna, it's devotion. Right? You can get into so many details, but you catch that one. So on the other one, you catch the false ego. Then you get the rest of the other elements. Right? Does that make sense? The mind, the senses, the working senses, right? The sense objects. You know, all that whole group. You get all that if you catch the ahankar. Like that.
So yes. This is where we talk about spiritual intelligence and material intelligence is
yes.
Dependent on
yeah. Because it means the intelligence is an element. So it's used for Krishna. It's spiritual. If you're not used, it's not. So it's, you understand? It means if this is a reflection of the spiritual world, that means there's spiritual intelligence. So if I can use the material energy in Krishna's service to spiritualize, then I can use this intelligence in Krishna's service to spiritualize. Same rock again.
Oh.
With the jagged edge. As deep as the jiva is in the clutches of Maya, to the same extent he is also alienated from Sri Krishna. Right? Because the connection to Krishna means you're not involved in the material world. Not connected to Krishna means how much you're involved in this material world. So the more you're absorbed in the material, the farther you are away from Krishna. Right? Because there's only one path. There's Krishna, and then there's going away from Krishna. Does that make sense?
Is it this comprehension that allows us not to be so connected to these moral elements because it's a question of positioning itself?
Yeah. It means if it's Krishna, because what's the importance of morality? You understand? It means The real importance for the materialist is that if there's no morality, how do I make money? Right? Okay, I make money by immoral means, but then if others are making by immoral means, I lose it. So therefore, I want to push morality. I may not do it, but I'm going to profess it. You understand? That's why you generally see is those who are the loudest about morality are generally from the business background. You know what I'm saying? Even farmers don't push it so much. You know, because it's like, you know, you take the seed, you plow the earth, you put the seeds in, you wait a while, and then you get the stuff back. You know, it's not some trick is there. You know, you go and, you know, whether this dirt will take it all or will I get anything back or, you know what I'm saying? It's not the, does that make sense? So you don't worry about it as much. So you see, generally they're, you know, they have them, they're good people. But they're more on interaction between people is important rather than the economic element. But of course, if you don't cooperate, then how do you work? You farm means it's weeding time. All the farmers come out and weed your field. Then they go to the other's field, or you're building a barn. They all come together and put up the barn. So it does have its economic element, but it's less, you know, there's a less passion like that.
It's a mortar.
Oh. You're going to...
The body's here from Assam, imported.
Oh, okay.
For rice.
For rice.
Oh, for rice, okay. Because in South they use that for mixing the coconut with the masalas. Wow, okay. Cool. Probably also work as a hat if it's raining.
Quite heavy.
Yeah, true.
Food processor. Food processor. Food processor.
Yes, food processor. Yes. Assamese food processor. Yes. Okay. To the degree he has shrugged off the mantle of servitorship to Maya, he can advance towards the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Right? So that's why you have what's this and you have what's that. But then you have the process to move from this to that. So that's the difficulty where you say, no, but if there's any of this, it can't be that. No, to the degree it's this, it's not that. To the degree it's that, it's not this. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then the neophyte, there's more of this. Right, in the Uttama, there's more of that, you know. In the Madhyama, that's why he's in the middle. There's this and that. You know what I'm saying? And the material world has come into existence by the desire of Krishna to assist the jiva in his attempt to exploit and enjoy Maya. So it's Krishna's arrangement, right? But we wanted it. However, this mundane universe is not a permanent residence for the jiva, but merely a prison house lodging them temporarily. Right? So they want to do this, so Krishna arranges it. But it's just like the state, you know, wants to arrange a prison for all the people who don't want to follow the rules. You know, it came from the natural, spontaneous, you know, interest to create a nice facility for the criminals. Right? But the point is it's temporary because it's not the natural state of the living entity, right? You know, just like living entity is not supposed to be bound, right? Eventually he gets out. So even if he's in the prison, eventually he gets out, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah.
Like that.
There are two statements I've heard from the devotees. First is that regarding Jivasattva, that Jivas were there with Krishna and they fall down from their position. And second is that Jivas were not there, they were come from the Krishna's Brahman aspects, and now by doing devotional service and practicing, they will go to that position and then come back.
But how can they come from Brahman when they're Tathasta Shakti? They would come from Tathasta Shakti. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't even make sense. How can they come from Brahman? Because, see, as we understand Krishna's supreme Brahman, then there's internal potency Brahman, there's Tathasta Brahman, and there's external potency Brahman. And in Krishna's Brahman, then there's Brahma Jyoti Brahman, Paramatma Brahman, and Bhagavan Brahman. But when they say Brahman, they mean Brahmajyoti Brahman. So what is that philosophy? It's Mayavad. It's all Brahman, but why are they choosing that Brahman? We're coming from Tathasta Shakti Brahman. You know what I'm saying? But that's just the position of the jiva. But what about choice? If the jiva means choice, where's the choice? If you came from Brahman and they're talking Brahmajyoti, Brahmajyoti is already a fallen position for the jiva. So where's the choice? So there was no choice. Right? So then, who's to blame? Not us. You understand? See why underlying we want to take this philosophy? Because then it's not my fault. And if it's not my fault, that means someone else has to do the work. But if we look at it from I'm with Krishna and I fall, means that's where I'm supposed to be, and so I should get it together and get back to there. So of the two, that one is the superior. The other one is quite inferior, because to do that, they have to go against so many things of the Shastra and authority and this and that. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's not right. Now, when you say, with Krishna, how with Krishna? This is the problem. One takes Brahman, one takes, you know, Braja Vrindavan in Goloka. But Tathasta means what? In between those two. So what's in between those two? You have to have, you know, the spiritual world. But you have to have the facility to deal with it materially. You understand? So that's the position. You don't fall from prema. Okay. But the point is they don't know enough of the philosophy that Uttama starts with, Brahma-Bhuta, which means the liberated platform. That's the neutral platform. Bhava is the neutral platform. And I say Brahma-Bhuta is the neutral platform. But you're using it to serve Krishna, therefore it's bhava. You're not using it to serve Krishna, it's mukti. That's the position you fall from. That's the platform. Means, in other words, you're situated on the Brahman platform, but the place where that Brahman is manifest is not Brahmajyoti. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is they can't distinguish between situations. Brahman as a situation, you know, does that make sense? That I'm in. Like, we're here in this building now. You know, an hour ago we were in the temple. Before that we were in wherever we're staying. You know what I'm saying? But on all those, you're remembering Krishna and being Krishna conscious. So, in other words, there's, are you being Krishna conscious or not? But then there's the situation. Does that make sense? Like that. So they have all kinds of, there's all kinds of problems that they can't accommodate. How can you be in the spiritual world and there be any mundane qualities? But the point is that's why there is a manifestation of the spiritual world in the material world, so that those who are devotees can be inspired. You can do both. If you can do it one way, why can't it go the other way? Right? Why is it you can change your conscience back to Krishna and go back to Godhead? So how did we get here? By doing it the other way. That's what it says here. As deep as the jiva is in the clutches of Maya, to the same extent, he's also alienated from Krishna. So the other way around. The more the degree is shrugged off the mantle, then he's advanced towards Krishna. So you're more thinking of Krishna, you're on that side. You're on this side. But they're going on simultaneously. But everybody wants this nice little box and say, I came from here. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is you can't go, you know what I'm saying? You're not gonna get it. Well, that's the basket in the, you know, ward for the infants in the Beth Israel hospital where I was born. You know, I can go and point that one out there. That's what they want to be able to do. And it's just simple. But the point is that these things are simultaneous. The Tathasta means it's two things at once. You don't like it, hey, then don't like being a jiva. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Because we're thinking in mundane terms of time and space.
Yes, that's the point. It's mundane time and space. Okay? Lahiri Moshai, O Master, kindly enlighten me on the eternal relationships between Maya Jiva and Sri Krishna. Vaishnava Das Babaji. The Jiva is an atomic particle of consciousness, Anuchit, and Krishna is the complete consciousness, Purnachit. Therefore, the Jiva is the eternal servitor of Krishna. The material nature acts as a dungeon wherein he is held captive. However, whilst imprisoned, he can also take advantage of saintly association to help him begin the process of chanting Harinam. Right? Because even in the prison, you have, you know, nice guys that come around to try to give good association. Then, gradually, by the mercy of Sri Krishna, he becomes situated his sarup, I guess situated in his sarup, and relishes the sweet nectar of devotional service to the Lord in his transcendental abode. This is the confidential truth about the eternal relationship between these three principles. How can one actually engage in pure devotion without this knowledge? Right? So he's within the material world. He's been placed here because of not behaving properly, right? Because of not dealing properly with the Lord, therefore we're placed in the material energy. As you start to deal properly with the Lord in the association of the Vaishnavas, then we gradually elevate ourselves, right? So here is that he comes situated in his sarup. So the sarup starts when, what's the actual basis of sarup? I'm servant of Krishna, right? The gopis, do they think they're servants of Krishna?
Yes.
What about Mother Jashoda and that group?
Yeah.
Cowherd boys? Cows? You know, blades of grass? You know? Okay? So, that's the actual sarup. Then the detail of the sarup is what is the actual form. You understand? This is generally what's missed when you're discussing this. Right? So we think sarup means, oh, it means the sarup siddhi and all that. No, that's sarup siddhi. The sarup starts with, I'm servants of Krishna. And the siddhi is then when it's fully manifest that you're serving in this particular way. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this because people have problems with principles and details?
Yes. My siddha means, you know, perfect, or boiled, cooked, right? So you have alu siddha, means, you know, boiled potatoes, right? So now, so siddha is there, but where did the process start? Right? It started by, you know, making plans, going to the market, picking out your potatoes, buying them, bringing them home, washing them, peeling them, you know, cutting them, putting them in the pot, putting the water, turning on the fire. All that, then you leave it there for long enough, it becomes siddha. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that, and then what are you going to do with it? Right? Use it in Krishna's service. Okay? So that's the process that's going on. So here we say, situated in this sarup, it means this natural form as servant of Krishna. Right? And that can mature into. Okay. Then gradually by the mercy of Sri Krishna, he becomes situated in his sarup and relishes the sweet nectar of devotional service to the Lord in his transcendental abode. This is the confidential truth about the eternal relationship between these three principles. How could, because it's for that. Otherwise, others would say it's to enjoy in the material world or to go to Brahman. But that's not actually the relationship. How can one actually engage in pure devotion without this knowledge? Right? If you don't know this, so that's his point before, if you don't have this sambandhyan, how do you know? Because otherwise, what's the relationship between you and Krishna and the material world? Lahiri Mahashaya, if knowledge is acquired through education and study, is it imperative to first become a scholar before one becomes a Vaishnava? Because that will be the next thing. Oh, if you're not studying in this way, then right. Vaishnava Das Babaji. To be a Vaishnava, neither formal education nor fluency in a particular language is necessary. right? Because formal education is how you go through the things. And it mentions here fluency in a particular language. It's described through the language, but it's also through understanding language that you actually can understand the logic of the philosophy. Does that make sense? That's why it's so hard to explain these things in English. There is no grammar. So you can't refer back to grammar, because otherwise you make a grammatical point, it's very clear, it's exact. Right? In order to eradicate the material illusion, one should take complete shelter of the feet of a bona fide spiritual master who is a true Vaishnava. Right? So true Vaishnava means one who is following the devotional process. That means the four rasas are the goal of the endeavor. Does that make sense? That's true Vaishnava. Right? Because otherwise you do have these Vaishnava smartas and the Mayavadis who are practicing Vaishnava processes. They're not true Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? Though the ritual is very exact, much more exact than anything we're used to seeing. Right? Even you see others, Shris and Madhvas, smartas would be even more into the rules than them. And they're really into the rules. Right? You know, so it'll be even more. So one could say, but they would be the best guru then. But it's not the ritual that's the point, it's the understanding, it's the mood. Right? Then the ritual supportive of that. Okay. So that's the point. True Vaishnava, not, well, unless he's a, you know, Uttamadhikari, Nitya Siddha, you know, liberated, you know, pure devotee. Right? That's the standard. Did I miss leave anything out? No, that's the standard. So Nitya Siddha means he's already on the prema. Right, you know, Uttamadhikari, that means he's on the platform of bhava. Liberated, you know, that's practicing. Liberated means he's at that point between conditioned and unconditioned. So that puts him just at mukti or brahmabhuta. Pure devotee, that brings it down to the madhyama, anishta. So I've said all for all the positions, but I think it's one position. Right? Yeah. And then I won't accept all of them. I'll say all that, but I won't accept all those positions like that. Yeah. So that's not what it is. So true means he's coming into parampara, he's practicing the true Vaishnava religion with the proper understanding, with the goal to please Krishna and serve him in one of the four rasas. Does that make sense? We're leaving out, in this case, Shanta, because it's not something that we're interested in. It's a bona fide rasa, but that's not our line. So that's why... then much of the time we talk about it as four. Right? There's five rasas, but we talk about four as our goal. The Vaishnava guru can impart sambandha gyan by his words and behavior. This is known as diksha and siksha. Right? So having that understanding, that's the siksha. But now taking that and taking that as one's life and soul, that siksha, that's diksha. You know what I'm saying? Then there's a formal ritual of diksha. But diksha is actually only accomplished when you take the words and practices of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. That's diksha. Does that make sense? Then one must cultivate an ideal moral character and practice Krishna consciousness. Right? Because the moral character here is not that the morality is important, but the morality means you're not doing some nonsense that's not taking you away from Krishna. Right? Because the more you're entangled in the material energy, the more you're away from Krishna. So the morality makes it you're pious. So your entanglement is in the mode of goodness as opposed to the mode of passion and ignorance. Does that make sense? Morality is trying to establish a mode of goodness. So therefore, that's why it's the superior position. Yes?
And you say that it is related to sincerity?
Sincerity. That's more the mood in which you do. You know, but moral is more of just a standing. You know what I'm saying? Because you can have somebody who's not necessarily so moral but can be sincere. Right, in their endeavors and like things like that. Is there something? Yeah. This stage of development is known as Abhideya Tattva, the process by which one achieves the ultimate desired goal, Krishna Prema. Right? So when one's situated like that, he's studying under devotees, following the instruction and the behavior, right? Then that process is known as Abhideya Tattva. Understand? Mm. So the ideal character was trying to cultivate that. It means, in other words, using the knowledge and trying to have the proper character in which to apply it. That's Abhideya. Does that make sense? Because some go after the knowledge, but not the character. Some after the character, not the knowledge. You understand? So that both should be there. But it's not that the knowledge and character is the bhakti. Right? It's trying to please Krishna through that. That's the bhakti. But that's the superior elements, spirit qualifications. Okay. Lahir Mahashaya, his eyes brimming with tears, said, "O Master, by your mercy I understood Sambandhagyan and my previous misconceptions have gradually disappeared. Now kindly teach me the Abhideya Tattva." So now we've finished Sambandha. Now he's going to get into the Abhideya. Okay, so we'll continue with that tomorrow. So now, the next class, the 10:32, 12:1, we're going to make a slight adjustment in the study. Because we've been, as we're going through and developing it, this next period, what it is the course is the philosophy, the history of philosophy and religion. So what it's supposed to give us an overview of the philosophy, you know, means our own, and what are the Vedic philosophies, what are the world philosophies and religions, that's its purpose. So the idea was to implement the Dasamul as just the essential points. You know, we're going through it here anyway. But just to see it in a very clear method. And then go immediately into the six systems. And so we were using, last time we used the Mahaprabhu Shiksha, which does just that. It only deals with the Dasamul. But then that got some, because Prabhupada mentions the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. So, because that is, gives all the essential philosophy. So then in going through that, then we find it gives exactly the same philosophy. It's got the same sections as in the Jiva Dharma. So, and it's just as big a work, because we thought it was a smaller work, you know, but it's not. It's a full-size work. So what we're going to do now is take any relevant elements from that, you know, clear definitions in that, and use them as footnotes and explanations on the Jiva Dharma. Because if we're going to use one of the two forms, then this form of story is nice. The Purana is considered a better method than using the Upanishadic. Right? So we're going to use that here. And then the next class will go, you know, continue where it's supposed to be going. So we'll start the six systems at 10:30. Okay? But today we won't run the afternoon one. We'll start that from Thursday. Okay. Like that, just gradually. You know, back in.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prabhu.